Hi, and welcome back to the study of Proverbs. Proverbs is one of the wisdom books in the Bible, found in the Old Testament, and one of five, which are Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Solomon. And we've been going through the book, and we have done it different ways. We have done some exposition. We have also looked at major portions of the book in the middle of the book, to be specific, in a topical way. And we're continuing with that today to look at some topics. We just did the topic of industry, which that title represents how you make your money, how you look at work, your work ethic, what you do with your money, how you view your money. Are you generous with your money? Do you give? Do you recognize it as coming from, as having come from God? That sort of thing. Your work ethic, whether you're lazy, that sort of thing. Also, your integrity in business. And if you want to see that dealt with, look at the previous recording on that. So we move into our next topic, which is righteousness. And righteousness, in Old Testament terms, isn't always the same as it is in New Testament terms. In New Testament terms, if you're a Christian, you know that you have the righteousness of Christ imputed to you, ascribed to you. It isn't your own righteousness, as Paul said in Romans. Instead, righteousness in the Old Testament, there's some elements of the New Testament type of righteousness in the Old Testament, but more often, righteousness is really how you conduct yourself with other people, how you treat your fellow man. I think we'll see both of those things, both the New Testament aspect of righteousness and the Old Testament in Proverbs. So let's get started. And there are actually several categories that righteousness in Proverbs can be broken down into. And I think that we actually are going to look at 12 of them. Hopefully it won't be too ponderous. Hopefully not. So let's start in chapter 1 of Proverbs. And let's get going, and we'll focus on a passage that starts at verse 32. Chapter 1 of Proverbs, verse 32. For the waywardness of the naive shall kill them, and the complacency of fools shall destroy them. But he who listens to me shall live securely, and shall be at ease from the dread of evil. Now Solomon is saying this. He is taking the position of wisdom in chapter 1 and speaking of wisdom, you know, personifying it, making wisdom speak. And so that's the context of what he says here. And what he's saying here is he's comparing two responses to God, two responses of God's pursuit of individuals, pursuit of mankind. He says the wayward, verse 32, and then he says he who listens. So what we have is we have the wayward versus the waiting. That's what it means to listen. To listen, oftentimes in the Bible, we have the person who is faithful, who is a believer, as being one who is soft-hearted, is tender-hearted, is receptive toward the things of God and toward God. And he is called the waiting or the listening person. So Solomon is saying that here. He's saying there's the wayward and there's the waiting. So this fits under the category of sort of the New Testament ethos of righteousness. Now let's jump over to chapter 3, a very famous passage. We'll look at a few verses in chapter 3 and see what they have to tell us. starting in verse 5, chapter 3, verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your paths straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord, and turn away from evil. So here we have the description of the individual who isn't self-wise, but he's God-wise. And he isn't self-trusting, but he's God-trusting. Do you see? And you know, a whole sermon could be made from these few verses, and have been. This is a very powerful passage that describes the heart of one who leans toward God, who is on God's side. Let's look at another one, chapter 16 of Proverbs, and just one verse. Let's look at verse 3. Commit your works to the Lord, and your plans will be established. Do you see the connection to the other two verses, to the other two passages? This is someone who isn't making his plans without God. He isn't making his plans and leaving God out. That is another snapshot, if you will, of a Christian, of a believer. All right? And let us look at one more. Let's go over to chapter 18. Chapter 18, verse 10. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous runs into it and is safe. Now, this is describing submission and relationship with God, or if you like, in New Testament terms, with Jesus Christ. So, this is another look at righteousness in terms of what the New Testament would describe as someone who knows they don't have it in themselves, knows they aren't good in and of themselves, and looks to God for that attribute, looks to God for that that goodness, that sanity, that righteousness that is described here. Well, there are many other verses that we can fit under the category of righteousness in Proverbs. And let's look at another one. Chapter 13, and well, let's look at verse 19. Desire realized is sweet to the soul, but it is an abomination to fools to depart from evil. Now we have some contrast again, and this is contrasting light and dark. Lightness and darkness, you bet. And look what it says. It says that fools hate good. And you remember what the definition of a fool is in Proverbs. It is the person who demonstrably, proactively has decided and is committed to opposition to God. Okay, let's look at another one, kind of in the same vein, over to chapter 23. Chapter 23 of Proverbs, and let's see verse 9. Chapter 23, verse 9. Do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words. So not only does the fool hate good, not only does the unbeliever or the one who's opposed to God, not only does he hate good, he also hates advice. He rejects and despises advice. Do you see? All right, let's back up to chapter 14. The reason I'm jumping around here a little bit is because I originally grouped these into subcategories, and you know, I'm just showing you those as I think of them. But let's look at another one. Chapter 14 and verse 2. 14:2. He who walks in his uprightness fears the Lord, but he who is crooked in his ways despises him. Now, this is a significant verse in that it describes righteousness as a relationship. Do you see that? Because we have a contrast, and in the Old Testament, there's a lot of parallelism. That is, either a good thing and a good thing, or a good thing and a bad thing, in the same verse. And this is, of course, the good and the bad together. And we can use that to understand and interpret the verse, because we have the fear of God in the first part of verse 2, chapter 14, and then we have despising God in the second half of that verse, verse 2. So we can see that if we need to understand and plumb the depths of the meaning of the fear of God, we have a hint right here. And the hint is that if you don't fear God, you despise Him. Now, you may not have listened to the recording about the fear of God. We did a whole recording just on the fear of God a while back. You can find that the same place you found this recording. But essentially, the fear of God is viewing God correctly. It's not theophobia. It is through God's word, mostly, understanding who He is and coming to a stark and searing understanding and revelation that He is something more than you thought He was. He is something beyond what you were assuming He was. You suddenly realize the utter vastness and utter otherness of God. His uniqueness, what the Bible calls His holiness, which doesn't mean pure, although He is pure. What holy means is other. It means unique. It means stand alone. And once you get a concept of that, that is the fear of God. It doesn't mean you're afraid of Him. We're using fear in the, you know, the connotation that would probably have been popular back in Shakespeare's day. In other words, a huge, huge respect, an awesome respect. And here we see that the opposite of that is to despise Him. So here again, we have a snapshot of what it means in the Old Testament to be righteous. Well, let's jump forward a couple chapters, and let's go to chapter 18, and let's look at verse 15. Chapter 18, verse 15. The mind of the prudent acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge. The prudent there, you can just use the word wise. It's just another way to say wise. So we have the mind of the prudent or wise acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge. So that's parallelism with two positives. And what Solomon is saying is, this is a person who's responding to God. So in the Old Testament, a righteous person is the person who responds to God. Okay? Let's go back again to chapter 14. Excuse my jumping around. Chapter 14, and let's zero in on verse 26. Chapter 14, verse 26. In the fear of the Lord there is strong confidence, and His children will have a refuge. And let's continue and read the next verse. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life, that one may avoid the snares of death. So we see here the fear of God mentioned again, which is, as I said, is just simply seeing Him correctly, having a good, correct view, perspective of Him. And by the way, as you'll find when you look up verses that mention the fear of God, you'll find out that when they mention man, and most of them do, we find out there are two aspects to the fear of God. It begins with viewing Him in a correct manner, but it goes on as a consequence, as an outcome of viewing God correctly. One then views themselves correctly. And you see that in so many places, and I encourage you to go back and listen to the Fear of God recording, because there we give many, many examples. For example, when the disciples are in the boat and Jesus is with them, or no, their disciples are fishing, and they've been fishing all day and they haven't caught hardly anything, and they mention it to the Lord, and you know, the next thing we know, there's so many fish in the nets that the nets are breaking and the boat won't hold them all. And I think they even count the number of fish. It's a very large number. And Peter, I guess now they're near shore and, you know, pulling their nets. And Peter looks at the Lord and he says, "Depart from me, Lord. I am a sinner." What happened to Peter? He got a glimpse of the Almighty embodied in Jesus Christ. And then that caused him to see himself differently. Do you see? That's the fear of God. Peter wasn't saying he was afraid of God. He didn't even use the word fear or afraid or terror. He said, "No, get away from me. I don't belong anywhere near you. For who you are, that doesn't belong near me. That doesn't belong near me." You see the point? So we can actually find a lot about the fear of God, and there is a lot in Proverbs on the subject. Let's look at another one. Chapter 16, verse 6. "By loving kindness and truth, iniquity is atoned for, and by the fear of the Lord, one keeps away from evil." You see that? Solomon is saying that when you fear God, it makes you obey him. It, the outcome of seeing him as he is, and therefore seeing yourself as you are, really are, that causes you to more faithfully and more consistently do what he says, to obey him, to love him. Isn't that neat? Okay, let's look at another passage that we have put under the category of the fear, or under the category of righteousness. And let's see. Let's go to Let's go to chapter 12. Chapter 12 and verse 1. 12:1. And here we see another piece of righteousness. "Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid." Now, reproof is just a fancy word for confrontation or instruction or teaching. So it's saying there that if you are, you know, to be righteous or to be called righteous in the Old Testament, would be someone who is teachable. Do you get that? Someone who's teachable. It happens again in the next chapter, chapter 13, again verse 1. "A wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke." A scoffer is a person who mocks and makes fun of and disses something. So it's saying that in the Old Testament economy, a person was called righteous if they were teachable. If they were teachable. And that's a very, very important thing that Proverbs tells us. All right, let's go forward another chapter, over to chapter 14, continuing to look at passages in Proverbs that deal with the subject of righteousness. That is, again, it's not exactly the New Testament version of it. It's sort of an Old Testament version. But it's still very significant. And that is, what the Old Testament would call someone if they were submitting to God and obeying God, that person would be called righteous. So chapter 14, and let's go down to verse 14:30. "A tranquil heart is life to the body, but passion is rottenness to the bones." What is that all about? Well, what that's all about is envy and jealousy And what it's saying is that a person who is righteous, a person who is loving God and obeying God, is a tranquil heart, and that's good for the body. And a person who is not obeying God, but is involved in envy and jealousy toward others and wanting what other people have and being upset because someone else has more than you, that's what envy is. This person, it says here, that is rottenness toward his bones now, or his body. Now, it's not that important whether this could be taken literally or not. You know, the Old Testament especially, but the Bible in general as well, has a lot of metaphor in it. You can't always, you know, the body here could be, it could be a metaphor or it could be literal. But I'll tell you what, I think they're both true. I think first, I think the more important part is the metaphor, the spiritual rendering. And that would be, you can't expect the best life. You can't expect the most out of life. And you certainly can't expect God's favor by hating others and wanting what they want, what they have, and being jealous toward them. And I think also, you know, science has proven that there are some physiological results of having bitterness and jealousy and envy, certainly. So I think they're both true. I don't think Solomon is necessarily speaking to the physiological, but it certainly would be included. It certainly would be included in what he is saying. You bet. That is as a potential, not necessarily as a given. I think that's pretty common sense. You don't have to overanalyze that. Okay, let's go back to chapter 8 of Proverbs, and wouldn't you know it, we have another fear of God passage. Chapter 8, verse 13. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogance and the evil way and the perverted mouth I hate. Interesting, it goes from second person to first person, which is not uncommon. Not in common at all. What's it saying there? God says he hates pride. He says he hates pride. And what is pride? I don't know if we really understand that in today's societal makeup, you know, landscape. I don't think we really understand what that word means. It means you think you're it. It means you are the center of the universe, certainly the center of your own universe, and you have no place for others, but more particularly, you have no place for God. That's what pride is. That's what pride is. Let's say something else about that. Let's go over to chapter 16, Proverbs 16. Let's look at verse 5, 16:5. Everyone who is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Assuredly, he will not be unpunished. Now, again, don't overanalyze this. It's not saying, you know, if you think too much of yourself, boom, God's going to get you. That's not necessarily what it's saying. What it is saying is you can't expect, just like before, you can't expect the best life if you live it only for yourself. If you live it only to lift yourself up and make yourself, you know, numeral uno, you know. Let's read it again. Everyone who is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. God hates it. Just like in chapter 8, he hates pride. He hates it. Well, there's a lot more. Let's pick a few more before we leave the subject of righteousness. We're only skimming the surface. You know, I don't want to put you to sleep. Over to chapter 28, and we have an interesting verse. We have chapter 28. Let's look at verse 13. He who conceals his transgressions will not prosper, but he who confesses and forsakes them will find compassion. This is describing the person who has been living a life of pride, been living a very proud life, and all of a sudden, kind of like Peter in the boat, all of a sudden he encounters the truth about himself and about life and about God and about Jesus Christ. And what he does is he breaks. That's what happened to Peter. He broke in two. His life was never the same. He said, wow. And this, verse 13 of chapter 28, is describing the same thing. The second half of the verse, he who confesses and forsakes them will find compassion. This is the person who's broken. Now, we use that word broken in some pretty creative ways today. But in the Bible, what it's speaking of is the person who did what Peter did, who said, oh my. You know, they're devastated. They're undone. Isaiah said he was undone in Isaiah chapter 6. Job in, I don't remember exactly what chapter, but in the late 30s, 38 or so, somewhere in there, Job says, I put my hand on my mouth. These men understood. They did it suddenly. And that's brokenness. That's brokenness. Do you understand? All right. Well, let's go back a few chapters to chapter 15. And as we get toward the end of this category of righteousness, that is the Old Testament's ethos for who would be called righteous in that economy, in the Old Testament economy, doesn't mean any more than that. But let's go back to chapter 15 and let's see verse 3. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, watching the evil and the good. Well, wait a minute. What is that all about? Well, it's pretty self-explanatory. What it's saying is that God has the last word. God isn't unaware of anything. He has his eyes on everything. In fact, there's another verse that actually says that. Over to chapter 20, verse 12. Over to chapter 20, verse 12. 20:12. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made both of them. And you say, oh, okay, neato mosquito, what does this mean? Well, think about it for a second. Solomon is saying, God made the ear and God made the eye. Do you think he doesn't see and doesn't hear? That's what Solomon is saying. The person who made the ear, he hears it all. The person who made the eye, he sees it all. He's in charge. He is ultimately in charge. And that's what Solomon is saying. You can't hide from him, and you can't give to him anything he doesn't already have, and there is no power, no authority, no rule that even comes close to him. Well, let's look at a couple more. Let's go over to 16. That would be the next chapter 16. And let's look at a couple more verses. Let's look at verse 1 of chapter 16. 16:1. The plans of the heart belong to man, but the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. All the ways of a man are clean in his own sight, but the Lord weighs the motives. Commit your works to the Lord, and your plans will be established. What's he saying? What's Solomon saying? Once again, he's saying, you don't pull anything over on God. You don't, he's not looking the other way at some point and you sneak something by him. He's got it all. He sees it all. Let's jump over to verse 9 of the same chapter. The mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. Theologians call this sovereignty. Sovereignty, it's a big fancy word, but it just means that he is the highest king. It literally means that in English, that he is the highest king. He is the ultimate sovereign, do you see? Sovereignty. And as such, there's nothing he doesn't know, and there's nothing he doesn't see, and there's nothing he doesn't control. Let's jump down to verse 33 of the same chapter and see if we get more of that. We do. 16:33, the lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord. Now, we don't do lots today unless you roll dice. That's probably the closest modern parallel to lots. But in the Old Testament, lots were fairly common. They ended in the New Testament. They ended in the book of Acts. And there's actually a place where it says they ended. But that's technicality. We won't belabor that. But what it is saying is that every time that you think you have to make a decision, and whether you make it by drawing straws or drawing toothpicks or spinning a bottle or, you know, whatever you're doing, you know, whatever it is, you know, flipping a coin, whatever it is you're doing, believe it or not, God's in it. God is in it. Why? You're saying, does he care about toothpicks and straws and coins? Well, yeah, he does. He's in charge of it all. That's what we mean when we say he is sovereign. He controls everything. If you really are intrigued by that idea, and maybe you are oppose it and it bothers you, you know, but if you're really intrigued by it, there's a chapter in Ecclesiastes written by the same person, the same author, Solomon. There's a chapter in Ecclesiastes, half of a chapter, chapter 3, where it describes how complete God's control is. Let's see, we may even go there, but let's do one more verse, and then maybe, let's see. Let's go over and go to Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is right after Proverbs, and I want to share with you a passage, and then we'll be done with our topic of righteousness. Let's go ahead and look at Ecclesiastes chapter 3, and this is a fairly famous passage that is well known, of all Bible verses, you know, all parts of the Bible that people are actually familiar with that really have no interest in the Bible. This is one of them. This is one of those passages that the man on the street is likely to know something about or have heard or have an opinion on. I don't want to go into too much of the backstory. There's quite a bit of backstory to it, but let's just look at the passage. And people do misunderstand this passage, but let's go ahead and read it. There is an appointed time for everything, and there is a time for every event under heaven. A time to give birth and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to throw stones and a time to gather stones. A time to embrace and a time to shun embracing. A time to search, a time to give up as lost. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear apart and a time to sew together. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. Many people take this, even Christians take this wrongly. A common Christian rendering of this passage is there's an ideal time. Like, you know, if you're going to get married, well, you know, God has the perfect time set aside for you to do that. Well, he does, but that's not what this is saying. Or, you know, there's a best time to, you know, buy a house or get a dog or get married or get that job, or, you know, if you're going to have a medical procedure, you know, a certain time is better than another time, you know, that sort of thing. Well, you can make arguments for that, but that's not what this is saying. What this is saying, you have to understand the context. This comes after Solomon. This is the third chapter in Ecclesiastes, and Solomon has been making a case in the first couple of chapters that God runs the world the way he wants, and nobody can say otherwise. That's what he's saying in the first couple of chapters of Ecclesiastes. He's saying, you know, we don't like it. We are upset by much of the way the world works. But Solomon is trying to tell us that's not our job. It's not our business. It's not our job. It's not our purview to say to God, well, you know, you can say to God, he doesn't mind you saying it. But that's not a faithful thing to say. It's not a good thing to say. When you say, well, God, I think I could do a better job. So Solomon goes, okay. And he launches into God's purview. That's what chapter 3, 1 through 8 is saying. It's saying this is God's purview. And look how he begins. Verse 2, a time to give birth and a time to die. Those are the bookends of a life. Do you understand? Those are the bookends of your life. And if God has control over the beginning and the end, what doesn't he have control over? Huh? What doesn't he have control over? And so that's what's going on here. And I only come to this passage because the sovereignty of God, that is the kingship, the purview, the authority, the right, you know, he has a right. The right is his. It's not ours. We don't run our lives as much as we think we do, as much as we'd like to. We don't. And I know this raises more questions than it answers. And unfortunately, the context of what we're doing here probably doesn't lend itself well to, you know, really getting into that. But once again, I direct you to the podcasts, the recordings on Ecclesiastes. And you will learn a lot of things. Ecclesiastes is a book about God, why do things run this way? And God actually answers. He actually says, well, here's why things run this way. Check it out. If this is what you want to know, that's the book you go to, Ecclesiastes. So anyway, that's the that'll do it for the topic of righteousness. Next up will be the topic of speech. We're still doing this topically so that we can navigate with some order and some continuity through the book of Proverbs, the middle of the book, which is kind of the most, you know, kind of scattered and sporadic. Next up, we'll have speech. We'll look at the topic of speech, which is huge in the Bible and consequently very, very big in Proverbs. So look forward to that. And in the meantime, believe God.